8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio. I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is Meet the People for October the 26th, 2010. This morning, my guest on the phone from Homer, Alaska, is Steve Delahanty. Steve is the refuge manager for the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, and here this morning to discuss Rat Island, which is now rat-free. Well, good morning, Steve, and thank you for coming on the program.
Good morning, Kels. I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, good. Before we delve into a discussion of Rat Island, for listeners who do not already know, we should say that Rat Island is a remote island in the Aleutians in the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, about 1,300 miles west of Anchorage, where biologists have been laboring for the last several years to eradicate the resident rat population. Steve, a lot of people would immediately respond to that information by asking the question, why was removing the rats from Rat Island necessary? So maybe you could begin by answering that question for us.
Sure. I'll give you a short answer and then expand on it a little bit. The short answer is because it makes the island more suitable, better habitat for the native species which belong out there. Rats are not native to North America, period, and certainly not to the Aleutians. And in fact, the kind of central and western Aleutian islands really had no native land-based predators at all originally. And so they provide incredibly important habitat for all kinds of wildlife, and most famously for seabird breeding. The birds will come to these islands, and because there are no animals that like to eat birds or bird eggs living on the island, they can stack up in these huge colonies of tens and hundreds of thousands, sometimes over a million birds in a colony. And then, of course, they're out foraging using the ocean to make their livelihood, but they need to breed on land, and they do that on the island, including historically Rat Island. But unfortunately, several hundred years ago, rats found their way to Rat Island via a shipwreck, and once the rats are there, the birds just sort of fade away, because the rats are eating the eggs, eating the chicks, sometimes eating the adult birds, and any invasive, non-native, predatory animal out in those island systems, be they fox or rats, just really have devastating consequences.
Well, can you provide a estimate, maybe even a broad estimate, of just how many rats were removed from Rat Island?
Well, it's impossible to know how many individual animals were removed or were killed, because we don't. They're not individually trapped and tagged. It's very logistically challenging process on a remote and rugged island like Rat Island. And so the kind of accepted method across the world is on a remote, rugged site like this, is to aerially spread a rodenticide. It's very similar to if people have ever used a rat bait in their garage or basement or shed or something like that. It's very similar to that, and we try and get some of that bait sort of all over across the island in case a rat is living in that area. And so we don't have any way of telling the numbers of individual rats, but Rat Island is close to 7,000 acres, and there'd be multiple, especially in the beach zone, there'd be many rats in a per acre.
Okay, so I'm curious, and you kind of explained it a little bit. You spray this rodenticide over the island. Now, people who live in large urban areas often have problems with rats. Would it be possible to spray this same kind of chemical over these urban areas without killing anything but the rats? Is that done or not?
It is not typically done. It isn't a chemical in the sense like you might think of a weed killer for your garden or lawn or something like that. They're pellets of compressed grain, ground up grain with this rat poison mixed in with it, and And you know, it's serious stuff. It's a dangerous product, and in terms of, you know, human contact and our pets and contact with you know, other wild animals and things like that. So it when there are people living in an area, it doesn't mean that you can't do something of some kind, but it makes it much more complicated. Yeah. So that was an advantage we had going for us on Rat Island, which has no people living on it and no buildings and sort of artificial habitat for animals to hide in.
Now, does this rat poisoning cause anything else to die unintentionally?
It can, and in fact, unfortunately, on Rat Island, it did. We work very hard to minimize that with you know, with the types of bait and the times of year that it's applied and the amount that's applied, all of that. But nonetheless, if an animal eats this, enough of this bait, depends on how large an animal is. But if another, in the case of Rat Island, for example, we had several hundred gulls died. Mm-hmm. And most of that probably from directly eating bait that rats didn't get. We tried to avoid that by the time of year and the kind of bait that we spread. But you know, we're in a learning process. We try and get better all the time with these sorts of projects, and we made some mistakes there that we hope to correct in the future. So we actually did, in fact, have some unintended mortality. And more famous than the gulls is that there were some eagles that died, probably as a result of eating gulls that had this chemical in their body. So then some eagles ingested it, and some eagles died. So that was unfortunate, and that's one of the risks that you run, and we try and minimize that risk. But in the long term, of course, we are providing habitat year after year after year for many, many, many more birds, tens of thousands of birds and other animals. A whole ecosystem will be able to return to health, and that will include eagles and gulls, along with many, many other seabirds and songbirds.
Okay, if you're just joining us on 8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio, this is Meet the People, and you're listening to Steve Delahanty, the refuge manager for the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, discuss the removal of rats from Rat Island in the Aleutian Islands. Well, now that there are no more rats on Rat Island, are you going to change the name of the island?
Well, it isn't my place to change the name, but I think there has been some talk of that, and I think it would be a fine thing if it happened. But my understanding is there historically, you know, sort of pre-European contact was an Anunga name for Rat Island, or Aleut name for Rat Island, and I think there is a move afoot by some folks to at least take a serious look at that. It would, you know, what is that name, and is it an appropriate name? And there's actually a branch of the federal government that is the official tallier of geographic names, you know, names of rivers and mountains and islands, and so ultimately it would be this. This branch of the federal government that would make the decision, but I think the people that are most informed about that decision are your listeners, and it's people who live in the area and have a long history of living in the area and using the resources of the area, and if they think that that's an appropriate way to go and would like to see a new name, then I suspect it could happen.
Okay, for those who are not familiar with the way the refuge operates, what does the refuge manager do during the course of a normal business day or normal week? Because you have a lot of land area that has nothing in it, no population, just some animals. And some of it's very sparsely populated, even when it comes to wildlife.
It is, let me give you a little background about this particular refuge, Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. It's the most far-flung, sort of scattered refuge in all the refuges around the whole country, because we have land under our care that is up in northwestern Alaska, up north of Kotzebue, up in that country, Cape Lisburn, Cape Thompson areas, down through the Bering Sea, out, you know, out the Aleutian Chain, and clear on down into southeast Alaska. So it's very spread out, and so there are all kinds of uses of the land, ranging from sort of pristine wilderness areas that are there for wildlife to continue to use and enjoy. But this is also an area, even when some areas have people living immediately associated and adjacent, of course, and even those areas that don't, this is a rich, important part of the world for fishing, for natural resources, for salmon, even, that will run, you know, run into the mainland. So it's supporting human food needs, transportation. There's shipping going on. So there's, just because it's an uninhabited area doesn't mean that there isn't any human activity in the area. And so the refuge staff, and there are many of us, it's more than one person can do. The refuge staff are working on a number of things, like just sort of keeping track of the biological resources out there. Are the birds, for example, are the birds doing well or not so well? Are they having young and successfully, and is the time of year that the eggs are laid and the food that they're feeding the young, is that changing? Because that can tell us something about the health of the ocean. These birds are out making their living out in the ocean, and as our biologists like to say, they're kind of nature's sampling units. They're out there grabbing fish or invertebrates and things, and if they're doing well, then probably the ocean is doing fairly well. If they're doing poorly, then maybe there's a, you know, it's sort of a warning sign that maybe there's something going on out there in the ocean. So we've got a very, very active research and biological monitoring activities that go on associated with the refuge, all including the Aleutians, but beyond that as well. And we do important work with people. We love to get involved with education camps and things we've got going in some of the communities associated in near refuge land. So we do a lot of education and outreach, trying to make sure that people can maintain that great tradition of you know, use of natural resources and subsistence use, and just loving the land that they live in and among.
Well, let me ask you about some of these reports and the observations that you've been making over the last couple of months. Steve, since the official word came out in the summer of 2010 that Rat Island is officially rat-free, have you seen a noticeable increase in the number of native seabirds living there?
We have seen a notable increase in not a seabird, but a particular songbird, the song sparrow, which is for residents of the Alaska Peninsula and the Aleutian Chain in particular. It's not an uncommon bird by any means, but it's one that's very sensitive to disturbance by rats and other non-native predators. And it's also quickly able to pioneer into an area and build up its population quickly. So that is one that has had a noticeable increase already. Some other species storm petrels or tufted puffins are things that we might expect to see on Rat Island, but it frankly will probably take some number of years for the birds to sort of pioneer out and find this new area and nest successfully. Once it happens, then their population will increase dramatically. But it takes the seabird response we don't expect to occur in a matter of a year or two. That we're talking about, you know, decades, not months or years.
Interesting. So the determination of whether it's been successful is going to be a multi-year process. Now, Rat Island, you mentioned earlier in the interview, got the rats that gave it its name from a shipwreck. And the shipwreck took place back in the 1700s, according to the press release. What was the ship that wrecked on Rat Island? Do you know?
I'm sorry, I don't know the name of it. I believe it was a Japanese vessel, if I'm not mistaken. But the origin in many ways doesn't matter. It happened, and it can still happen today. That's an important point. So there are ships, both U.S. ships and foreign ships, sailing through this part of the world all the time, and it's awfully important that we try and maintain ships and docks and ports as rat-free zones, so that we don't accidentally move rats again to, be it probably not so likely Rat Island, barring a shipwreck, but other places that don't have rats that, maybe fishing boats are tying up on, or commercial vessels of one kind or another. So we have an ongoing effort in collaboration with many others to try and keep, for example, the Pribilof Island, St. George and St. Paul have no rats on them, and it would be absolutely devastating if they did get rats. And we want to work very, very hard to keep those areas and other rat-free areas in their rat-free condition.
Now, you mentioned the refuge is extremely large, and there are many, many islands throughout the region. If you were shipwrecked on one of these remote islands, how long do you suppose it would be until the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or a refuge manager came and found you on that island?
Well, the most likely, if you're asking truly a search and rescue question, it would most likely be our wonderful Coast Guard, who have the the expertise and the tools to go out and effect a rescue. In terms of refuge staff, me personally or folks that work for the refuge visiting a certain island, we have some of them that we go to every year, year after year, and in fact camp on, live on throughout the summer field season. But frankly, many of them are so remote that we don't get there ourselves but every 10 or 20 years. So goodness, you could live there a good long spell before you'd see a refuge person on some of the areas that are, perhaps small or very hard to reach. Some areas are just not real hospitable for landing a craft and spending any time out there.
All right. So another key question that I have, and I think probably a lot of our listeners do too, as they listen to you talk about the removal of rats from Rat Island, is just what did this project cost?
Yeah, that is a great question. It's very, very expensive, which is part of the reason why we want to work so hard to keep rats from reinfesting an area or from coming into an area where they've never been present. The Rat Island project cost approximately $3.5 million, which is a lot of money. There's just no way around that. Although you have to think the benefit lasts for hundreds of years, so that helps. But it's very, very expensive, and thankfully we had wonderful partners. This was not just a Fish and Wildlife Service thing. This was a group of three different organizations, the Refuge and the Nature Conservancy, a wonderful nonprofit group who did an awful lot of the fundraising to get the money for the project, and a group with great technical expertise on restoring island habitat called Island Conservation, and they had a lot of the technical expertise about how to actually go out and do the project. So these three groups worked together, and the Nature Conservancy did a great job of raising much of that $3.5 million.
Is there a permission process that you have to go through as a federal agency to make substantial changes, like removing a non-native species from an island or area that you have authority over?
Yes, there is. Because there are multiple organizations having some interest or perhaps some regulatory oversight one way or the other. So, for example, on our invasive species projects, not just Rat Island, but where we're getting rid of, for example, invasive fox off of an island or rats on Rat Island, we work with the state of Alaska, because certain species they protect and regulate, and we would need special permission to get rid of them. We also need to work with the pesticide itself, the rodenticide, the rat poison, is regulated and labeled for use, and you have to have permission to use that product. In our case, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has a kind of permission to use this bait, so we had to go in and coordinate with them. So, like most things in life, there's more than one organization involved. Even on an uninhabited island, that's quite a ways out off the mainland. It's not just a go-it-yourself operation.
Well, how do you handle more difficult situations where maybe half the island is the National Wildlife Refuge and the other half may be inhabited, and there may be people who have herds of animals or once had herds of animals that have been abandoned over the years and moved across but into the National Wildlife Refuge area and maybe are hunted by people who live in the neighboring community? Has that been hard for you to handle those kinds and types of situations? How do you handle that?
It does tend to be difficult. The only real solution is to work cooperatively with those communities and with the people, because the refuge, the Fish and Wildlife Service, doesn't have exclusive say as to what is going on the island. But by the same token, we have some responsibilities to try and take care of land that Congress has set aside as a refuge, and so. We have many examples where just that very thing occurs, and in some areas we have not yet accomplished very much. In other areas, we work very closely with communities, and it might involve something like, for example, on a larger animal like cattle or reindeer or something like that, we might work to try and restrict the size of the herd. So we're not getting rid of them completely, but yet they're not completely overrunning the refuge areas as well. Or with certain species and in certain places, there are fencing options and things like that to confine animals to one side or another. And then there are some cases where nobody is interested in having these animals out there, and then it's a matter of figuring out, is there a feasible and economically reasonable way of removing the animals that nobody wants on private land or on refuge land. So all of those cases occur on different islands.
Just in our few remaining moments with Steve Delahanty, he is the refuge manager for the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. Steve, how did you come to have this position in Alaska?
Well, I've been blessed. I work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, something I enjoy very much, and I've worked on other national wildlife refuges, managing federal lands in different states, and this opportunity arose, and this refuge, Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, is famous not just in our part of the world, but really around the country and even worldwide, as being probably the premier seabird refuge in the world. And it is just a great honor to be able to work with the talented people on the staff and to work with the communities involved and the people that live out in this fascinating part of the world. So that's a long answer to a short question, but it's a great job, and I've worked and moved in many different states, and now I get the pleasure of being here.
Well, Steve, just one more question for you. I know the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been active in the Aleutian Islands, restoring seabird habitats by eradicating non-native species for more than four decades. Do you have any other projects in the pipeline for the more immediate future, like the one on Rat Island, taking the rats off Rat Island? Are there any things planned coming up that we should know about?
We have needs. We would like to do things, but there isn't anything in the immediate future. Our plans for next year really involve going back to recently treated spots and making sure we were effective, just like we did for Rat Island. We went back this year to make sure there are no rats. So 2011 is really mostly about checking to see whether we were successful or not with our 2010 work, where we, for example, removed fox from Kanaga Island. And then going into the future, there are other islands with rats, there are islands with cattle, there are islands with fox, and, you know, we just need to decide where to go next and look for the money to get the job done.
All sounds good, and like you're doing good work throughout the Aleutian Islands. It's a large area, as you say, so I think it's a lifetime of opportunity for you and those you're working with. Well, thank you.
Well,
thanks for coming on the radio this morning and talking with us about Rat Island. It's a story that we've heard something about little by little over the last few years, so it's interesting to hear directly from you about what's been going on there and why the decisions were made that were made.
Well, thank you. You're welcome, and thank you for the opportunity, and thanks to all the wonderful people in the communities that live in this part of the world. They are we just love interacting and working with them.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thank you very much.
That was Steve Delahunty. He is the refuge manager for the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. He was talking with us about the removal of rats from Rat Island. And we'll now go back to more music right here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP.